Let's see what happens when we dare to color outside the lines. You're listening to Color Mixology, the debut podcast from Sherwin-Williams.
Hello, and welcome back to Color Mixology by Sherwin-Williams. I'm your host, Sue Wadden. Today is a special one. We've invited two of the most visionary designers in the business, who also happen to be our newest brand partners, for a no-holds-barred conversation on color trends. And not just the trends you already know about, but also the shades, shifts, and surprises coming next. And maybe more than a few hot takes. So let's get into it. Ariane and Sarah, we want to give you the warmest possible welcome to the show. Let's go around and have each of you introduce yourselves, tell us about some of the exciting things you're up to right now, and just for fun, tell us, if you could describe the current color mood in design in one word, what would it be?
Well, I'm so excited to be here with one of my favorites, Sarah, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about color. I am an interior designer based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I have, over the past few years, been able to say that I've expanded my market past this little city in Louisiana and been able to do projects all over the country. Some of the exciting things that I've been able to do, one of the reasons I got to travel so much is last year I was a part of the reboot of Extreme Makeover Home Edition. So that took me almost on a road tour to multiple cities helping families. And it was kind of the opportunity of a lifetime. But in my everyday work, I get to work with residential clients who are working on residential renovations and new builds. And then we've also been doing a lot of commercial work for multifamily development, which is sort of becoming a passion project for me because it is an opportunity for me to really create environments where people can have pride in their home, even if it's something that is temporary, really thinking about how to make sure that these spaces and buildings rise to the occasion and create the right environment for them to feel seen and heard and loved and to be able to impact so many more people at one time. So the commercial space and multifamily development has definitely become something that I look forward to working on, and it'll be a lot of the work we continue to do over the next few years. So if I had to think about what I see as the current pulse of design and try to do one word, that's hard. But maybe what I would say is what I think I'm seeing what I hope I'm reading correctly is courage. And courage being kind of the ability to think about how you want to design and create your home that is absent from the judgment, opinion, or perceived value of anyone other than yourself. That is truly what the luxury of design is. And I think for so long, people were really nervous about doing anything that would, you know, mess up resale value or like not be the current trend or like, I didn't see that on Instagram, so is it right? And really kind of externally allow people to validate their choices. Now I feel like people are kind of turning inward, becoming more in tune with who they are and what they like, and they are committed to being their most authentic selves. And you see it as an expression of how they are designing their homes and the risks they're willing to take. And that used to be something you only saw at the very top tier luxury echelon. But I think now, even in mainstream, you see people embracing that courage and really taking bolder steps in their designs.
Yes, which thank goodness, right? Because if we had 10 more years of gray and white, I don't know that I could have taken it.
Right. You'd be out of business. Please. There are multiple colors.
Yeah, it just gets so exhausting. So people need that. They need that courage. That's a great word. I love it. Okay. Sarah, what are you thinking?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I'm so excited to be here, and I'm not going to be as eloquent in the slightest. I have not had enough coffee. Yeah, so I'm the founder and principal designer for Band Design. We are headquartered in Austin, Texas, and have an office in Los Angeles, California. And we focus on high-end residential primarily. We do a little bit of commercial work, but it really needs to feel really, really special if we're going to take it on, because I find it not my fave. I love the emotional component of residential design, for better or for worse. I love the roller coaster of it. So that's where we love to play. And we do everything from small remodels and refreshes all the way to custom ground up construction. And I like to play in all different sizes of spaces. right now, we've got a lot going on. Because we have an office in Austin and in LA, I'm on a plane quite a bit going back and forth, which I love. And it's actually worked very well for both me and the business. But specifically, we are wrapping up, literally starting today, the House Beautiful Whole Home of the Year, for which there is filled with many, many delicious Sherwin-Williams paint colors in it. But today's the first day of install, and I'm a nervous wreck, and I feel like I'm going to throw up everywhere.
I can't wait to see it.
But I'm so excited. This is probably the most pivotal moment of my career. So we're wrapping it up, me as the lead, and I just can't believe it's all coming to life now after many, many years of talking about it, and now several months of actually doing it. So
now it's here.
Yeah, it's here. And next week when we really load in everything, I might be really sick, but here we are. So that's one of the amazing things happening and, you know, lots of other great work going on. I'm really excited to be helping several clients. And in fact, right now I have a return client who we're working on their primary residence. We did their vacation home a couple of years ago and their vacation home was affected by the Texas floods this summer. So now we're having to redo that home. And that was, you know, I know people who, obviously I know many designers who lost their work and people who lost their homes in the LA fires, but for it to really hit home, it's like, oh, like that hurts so bad. So I'm excited to help them get it and bring it back to life. So there's just a lot and I'm excited. And in terms of what I'm seeing out there, kind of what Ariane said, like courage is a great word. I think people are less scared of color. And they're letting us play a little bit more. If I, you know, say, let's throw yellow on the wall, they're not going to look at me like I've lost my mind, like they may have 5 years ago. And on top of that, when I say, hey, let's also paint the ceiling, they don't look at me weird anymore. And so they're open to trying things in new places. We don't have to do white baseboards. We don't have to do white ceilings. We can throw color in places that are not really unexpected for a designer, but might be unexpected for the traditional homeowner, and they're more open and receptive to it. So I'm really excited about that because it really elevates the space. Even if you're working in a mid-range budget, you can make it feel so much richer and fuller. So I'm excited to see where that goes and hope people keep saying yes.
I totally agree, you guys. It's taken us a bit. We've been talking about this change and talking about it for like 5 years, and now I feel like it's finally here. So that's going to lead kind of into our exploration of color trends, which is great. So where, you know, residential design can be different than commercial design, obviously, for obvious reasons. But where do you find your inspiration for residential design lately, I guess? Sarah, we can start with you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would be lying if I didn't say I look at other designers' work and other designs out in the world. That's a great way to get your brain sort of going and satiate the palate. And this is sort of a pretty standard answer, but travel is a big one for me. And just going out and seeing the spaces, like Ariane talking about traveling all over for Extreme Home Makeover. Actually, I'm about to post an Instagram reel talking about the 5 best things about being a designer. And I joke about this, but like one of the only bonuses we get in this job is that we get to travel for our job. And people are always surprised to hear that when I say, like, next week I'm going to Italy to go check out natural stone. And it's not because I just want to go to Italy. It's because I've been invited to go see this stone. And that's a bonus of the job. But with it comes the education from seeing spaces around the world and cultures and textures and all the things you don't get to experience maybe right in your backyard. So for me, that's a really great place to find inspiration.
Great. Love it.
Yeah, travel for sure. And for the reasons that you mentioned, I don't think I've ever consciously thought about the fact that that's a perk of the job, but it really is. It's a part of our research and development is that we get to and have to get out of our four walls to see the world. It's why when we go to Italy or go to any part of Europe, we are blown away by the architecture and the structures. If you look at the root of those structures, they are influenced by where those people traveled. So they would go hundreds of years ago to another part of the world, be influenced and informed, come back and bring a version of that to their world. And now we are appreciating their interpretation of that. That's what design is. And that's what we get to do in our own small way. But I would also say that a part of my inspiration always kind of goes back to and is rooted in the story of the people that I'm helping, the family that I'm helping. So if it's on a residential project, I'm really curious about what they love and what they've experienced and what makes them who they are. And then I want to go deep in that. So I might learn, you know, we had a project last year. We just actually finished it and photographed it at the beginning of this year. But I worked with a client who they were downsizing from this dream home that they had built. They bought a new home. And one of the things that they shared was that the husband had like a 20-year sobriety journey and his faith was very important to him. And so he was like, that is important to me, but my wife wants to hire a designer. It's whatever she wants. And she was like, I just don't want it to look like a cathedral. I don't want to, like, I'm walking into a house that's like, you know, a shrine. And so I was like, the challenge of being able to make him feel seen and heard while appreciating the aesthetic she wanted was one I loved taking on. And so if you saw that project, you would see a beautiful home. You would not see anything that was overtly religious or anything that was like in your face. But everything from the shade of blue that we chose for the ceiling to the light fixture to the way we brought in alabaster elements, everything was, I would walk him through the house and say, these are Easter eggs for you. And the research it took to know like what he needed to see and signal and to be able to kind of fold it into a home in a way that was seamless and that was not so in your face, but it felt really special because it was kind of like his secret notes. That's what I feel like every project has for me. It's that ability to let the clients inspire me and let them kind of guide me on where I want to go deep. And then if that means a trip, great. Or if that means, you know, I'm researching online or like asking ChatGPT a million questions about like, what's the symbolism? Like whatever it is, that's a part of like the fun part of our job. We get to continuously learn. There's never a moment that we're ever going to say we know everything and we've learned all the things. Our job is when we are continuing to learn every day, new, wild, random facts that we bring into projects to make sure that our clients feel seen and heard.
100% agree. And what they don't teach you in design school is that that's one of the biggest parts of being a residential designer is that you're, you know, part therapist, right?
Part
problem solver.
80% therapist.
That's right.
You know, people that haven't worked with a designer before think that this is the most glamorous job in the world. And yes, part of this is, but it's also really tough. You are on site. You are running crazy hours. You are having to solve problems that not the average person has to do in their day-to-day work. So kudos to both of you, right?
I came from an entertainment background and I was told I needed a thick skin there, but like nothing prepares you for the thick skin and problem-solving ability you need as a designer.
Completely. And, you know, it's intensely personal. You're in people's homes, right? Of course it's personal. So navigating and getting your vision to see over the finish line in someone else's home is really challenging. So kudos to you guys for doing great work and like keeping us going, right? So my next question is a little outside of interiors. And I think we touched on for both of you that travel is an influence, but is there something else, you know, fashion, movies, shows, an artist, like what recently, if you can think about, has sparked a color moment for you, maybe this summer that was outside of the norm?
Well, I will say I'm not a big fashion girly. I'm not changing my wardrobe out, you know, every season. But I do sort of visually participate out there in the world and like to see what's out there. And I typically speaking, interior design has sort of followed fashion. And about a year ago when I started seeing yellow everywhere, like your beautiful shirt, I was like, oh, okay, we're going to be doing yellow now probably in about a year. And of course, like what did I design 2 weeks ago? A yellow bathroom that it would have never crossed my mind before. So I'd be lying to say I wasn't inspired by fashion in some way. It's not necessarily in my own day-to-day changes, but we saw it with brown. We're seeing it with yellow. So fashion is definitely a current that I follow.
I agree. I'm not a huge like devotee to fashion, but I'm aware of kind of their trends because I know that there's some parallel. I think to think about your question of like what inspires me outside of travel that I could bring into design and specifically color, I think one of the things that I committed to this year was kind of a return to my creativity. You know, believe it or not, as designers, we hit a wall. We hit a wall. It's either because of burnout or overwhelm or like all the things or the world. Like there's many reasons where we feel like we just kind of tapped out creatively. And so I read this book or didn't finish it yet, but am reading this book called The Artist's Way.
Am reading.
No judgments.
Not a whole lot of extra time. But The Artist's Way was a book that talks about how to return to your intuitive creative, like your inner child. And it encourages you to journal, but also to do these like weekly artist dates. And so one of the weeks I chose as an artist date to do something that I used to do all the time when I was in design school, and then I got out of it, but it was my favorite part of design school. It was color theory, and we would have to take something, a photo or a fabric, and we would have to use primary colors to recreate the colors that we saw. So it really trains your eye to understand the nuance of color, not just like see it flat, but go, oh, well, that's a, you know, red with a little bit of violet, with a little bit like, and you can kind of see it. And so I had the best afternoon taking a fabric out of one of my boxes and taking out my paint and like literally trying to, and I actually have it if I could, it's too far away, but like recreating the shades within that fabric. And I loved everything about it because while with Sherwin-Williams, we have beautiful palettes and we have this incredible fan deck and we have all of the tools, don't forget, you can also customize and you can also, you know, use their tools and resources to adjust colors if you need to, or, you know, if you want something that's a little bit more spot on or a little bit more muted or a little bit more nuanced, but you have to understand color to be able to explain what you're trying to get to in the end. You can't just go, I kind of think I want, like, you've got to be able to guide them. Let's try a little bit more black. Let's try a little bit more blue. And that to me is something that I loved honing in design school, but I also want to bring that more back into my daily creative practice. I think it's just so relaxing to, you know, to try to paint and mix and adjust shades. And so I think that is informing and influencing and inspiring me to think differently about the colors that I choose and how I'm using them and whether or not the way that I see them presented is the way I want to use them or if I want to make some adjustments to them.
Yeah, I think that's a great practice for veteran designers. You know, we do that so much, color theory, when we're in school. But when you get practicing, you get in your rhythms, you find your favorite colors, it's hard to break out of your norms. So for our team, we like often are, when we're building palettes, we have like our beautiful, like organized color file, and then we have a messy one where we just like take color chips out and put them down on a table, and you just have the chance to play and pull interesting combinations together. And it's like, it's a little therapy session where you feel like you're still working, but you're like breaking out of your routine. It's fun.
It's that element of play that, you know, when we reach a certain level with our careers, and I'm sure Sarah can attest, you don't really leave margin for play. You're so focused on the work in front of you and like, you know, deadlines, and you got team that depends on you and clients that need you. And so we don't really carve out the space for the play, which is where the creativity actually lives. And it's what we kind of need to proactively and intentionally mark out for ourselves so that we always have a little bit in that well. You know, we're not running that well dry and then kind of going, I have nothing left to give.
And like giving yourself permission to do it. It's okay to take, and maybe it's on your own time, right? Now it's not billable time, but it's important. I don't know. Color can save the day. I tell you what. So let's talk a little bit about Color Mix. You guys have seen the forecast palette. So our Color Mix 2026 Anthology Volume 2. For any listeners that aren't familiar with our forecast, this is our biennial. So every 2 years we come out with like a purely color forecast. It's not so much about the design trends. It's more about the color families. And because we have gotten feedback from designers that they really want to know and like see the arc of where color is going. So this year we've got a palette of frosted tints, which I wouldn't call pastels because they're not sweet. They're sort of muted. So we like the idea of frostiness and cool, almost like an analogous color palette of greens, sort of purples and blues. We have reds and golds on the other side of the spectrum, which is autumnal shades, which happens to be, that's like my sweet spot. I love warm colors. But then dark, deep dark colors and nuanced neutral. So four palettes of really where we're seeing and forecasting where color's going. But I'll ask both of you, are there any color families in here that surprised you or something we miss? Like, what are you seeing maybe that's not in the forecast that we should pay attention to for next year? So Ariane, let's start with you on this one. Put you on the hot seat.
I definitely was drawn to the restorative darks, restorative. Yeah, darks. That's right. Especially being in Louisiana where our spaces tend to be a little bit more traditional. I mean, I feel like they could go with any design style, but that palette and the richness of it was what I was drawn to at first as my favorite. I was surprised at the frosted tint because I was like, is that really like something that we're pulling or going to be pulling or referencing, or are people going to need or want those? And that was the one that I was the most like, I don't know, until I took my European tour this summer. And I realized if you look at a picture, right, you look at a picture of, for example, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which is like, it's really leaning. I don't know how it passed code. I don't know. I don't know how. It's really leaning. But I have always heard of and learned about that structure for its unique, like, quirkiness, right? I didn't realize it's covered in this beautiful marble that has all of these beautiful shades. And many of them are like these subtle blues, subtle greens, subtle violets. And that frosted tint moment that I couldn't really kind of connect looking at the palette itself, I could see the nuance of it in examples like that when I went to Europe and could see the materials that they used and how it looks, especially how it plays against like the beautiful natural sky. And like, that was the most surprising to me to have anything resonate with, because I really didn't know if there was a palette that I could see myself using that had those tones.
I totally agree. For me, that was my stretch. And we'll talk about that in a second. But Sarah, what's your take?
Okay, so I totally agree about the frosted tints. At first, I was like, what? I don't know. But then actually what I did was look at it more granularly, like each individual color rather than the whole collection. And I was like, oh, wait, hold on. Yeah, I could use this. Yeah, I could use this. And in fact, even, you know, looking at Grape Mist, which purple's scary for a lot of people, right? But I recently just sold a client on doing their entire primary bathroom in purple. So I was like, yeah, we could make a case for this. And so I kind of liked that it was almost like a push or out of your comfort zone, a little bit of like, no, I'm going to test you guys a little bit here with this color and a little bit more forward thinking. I too was really drawn to the restorative darks. I love color drenching a space in a dark color. People think that's going to make their space feel smaller when in actuality it doesn't at all. So I really love that. And kind of similarly to what Ariane said, yeah, I don't know. I loved all of them. But in fact, honestly, like the frosted tints like scared me the most, but I would use them more probably than I would the sun-baked tints.
Yes, which is very specific.
Right. And that's very like, I love like the lemon chiffon. I've used that already. But some of the more reds, not even so much like the oranges, but they read a little bit more like New Mexico. And so, yeah, it is a specific look, but I also think there's a case for them, whether it be on bookshelves or on a ceiling or kind of somewhere unexpected. I think that's where somebody who's not a designer might get a little hung up looking at these, because you're thinking about them just in the four walls of a room, but there's so many ways you can use them. And whether it be a ceiling, built-ins, kitchen cabinetry. I mean, the list goes on. So I'm excited.
Even accents in upholstery or, you know, drapery or your throw pillows. Like that's, you know, sometimes we talk about like, you know, the 60-30-10 ratio, like how you're obviously bringing color into a space. I totally agree with you guys. The frosted tints was a struggle. And one of the reasons, not a struggle, but it's on the rise. So we have, you know, four palettes and that's really kind of our norm. You know, the neutrals, that was a conversation on where neutrals are going. The deeps, that's kind of been, we've been living with deep colors for a couple of seasons. Warms, we've seen the warms on the rise, but this frosted tint is new, right? So we're showing in the European shows, the design shows, there's a lot of silver and almost like in all different forms. So silver metallics, mercury grass, like this icier thread of color is starting to emerge. And, you know, those tones don't always look good with warm hues. Like that's not my favorite combination with beige or browns or nut browns. So how is this silver tone that's going to be in product design going to impact our interiors? So starting to see cooler tones again was important. So that's where that frosted tints emerge. So it'll be fun to see where this goes, which leads kind of into a question I'm going to ask in a minute. You know, where do you see color going in the next 12 to 18 months? That's kind of our cadence. We don't go too far out because that's too far. But where do you guys think, where do you think color is going to go? Sarah, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, piggybacking on what we were saying earlier, I think it's going to go much further and wider, and the net will just be cast wider. I do see a case for, like I brought up several times, the yellows and the purples. I think you're going to see it more than you would expect. I was never full in this. I'm going to get prosecuted for this, but I was never fully sold on the brown trend, like it coming in full force. I thought everybody's going to do brown. And in 4 years, we're going to look at this and be like, ugh, you know, clearly this was done in 2025. So I do think that that is maybe going to wash away a little bit, but you are going to see some more usage of fun colors in smaller spots, whether it be a small bathroom or, like you're even saying, in your textiles or even the frame of a piece of furniture. So I think you are going to see some of those colors emerge more and be less of a risk or less of, you know, sort of looking at it like it's you're going out of your comfort zone. And, oh my God, can you believe they have a purple chair? Like that won't be a weird conversation anymore, which I think is what you're going to see over the next year.
Yeah, I agree with her sentiment of just color going further in terms of the range of colors that we see. I think it might be a little bit more challenging to even pinpoint a specific like trend palette because people are going to be a little bit more adventurous with their colors. I also agree with her that not only does yellow have a moment, because I'm telling you every time I wear this color, I'm like, girl, that is your color. But similarly, when I wear any shade,
you look beautiful in all colors. Yes, you are a color
girl.
I will send you your check
in the mail. Thank you for that. But I also agree that any shades of purple are having a moment, from violet to lavender, lilac, and then the bold. My favorite color to mix and create in school, and I keep going back to this color theory class because it's my favorite, was red violet. Any version of red violet just moved me. And I feel like that's going to have a huge moment, whether it's a raspberry or something that's an aubergine or anything in between. That color, I think, just has such a richness to it. And I think it plays either way. It plays to people who want to be bold and adventurous. It also has roots in feeling like there's luxury and royalty and like stature with shades of that family. So if there's any color families that have the rise, I'm definitely with Sarah on this. Yellow shades, purple shades, and then as a whole, colors in general, all almost getting an opportunity to kind of be evaluated for their purpose.
We totally agree. We're seeing that in our forecasting. We're starting to work on 2027 in the next couple of weeks. And that's something that we talked about. It was really, you know, coming out of COVID, we were all about natural colors. So colors of nature, biophilic principles, blues and greens. And then now in this second half of this decade, it's going to be fun to watch the vibrancy and the saturation like step up a little bit. And purple, I want to go back to purple. I don't know if you guys saw our campaign. It's our second year, but we're working on our third year of the loneliest color. So it's a campaign that celebrates the least tinted color, like the underappreciated, the overlooked, because inevitably when you have 1700 colors, there are going to be colors at the bottom that people don't gravitate towards. So our first year was a gold, Kingdom Gold, which is like a really rich, like really saturated, almost like harvesty gold. And this year was Radiant Lilac. So it was purple. And it was kind of a lilac version, a little muted. It's a historic color. But what was so great is we launched this campaign. It was wonderful. Very, you know, we got a lot of awareness and impressions. And I walked into a Sherwin store to pick up a can of paint. And there was a little girl who was sitting in the aisle, or, you know, in front of the color wall. And she said, "Mommy, I want the loneliest color. I want that purple." So like, you know, I think those color moments, while we love it because it's a campaign, it also is helpful to people when they see beautiful, rich color out in the world, whether it's on TikTok or wherever they consume their media. Seeing it is really important. So kudos to both of you for embracing color and like showing people how they can use it in a really beautiful, interesting way. So thank you for that. So we're going to talk a little bit about evolution. I think we kind of covered it, that saturation is coming. But are you seeing, there's been a very strong thread of black and white through interiors, probably also with natural colors. Do you see that kind of like maintaining? Do you think black is going to minimize? Do you use black a lot in your work? Just curious about that personally, really.
I think we have used black and white, black, white and gold, black, white, neutral in our palettes for the past few years because people were requesting it because it's what they saw. And then I kind of got on this soapbox of almost feeling like I had to challenge people on, you know, what's appropriate for your region. Like, what's the reference for the black? The purpose for the black? Where did it originate? Did it make sense in that region? And does it make sense in your region? There are a lot of houses here that, you know, some neighborhoods, especially if a developer goes in and comes up with a neighborhood of homes that all look cookie cutter and they all have the Instagram standard, you know, white brick, black, accents. And then on the interior, it's very, very, you know, neutral, colorless palettes. And I think that while that looks appealing online because it's magazine worthy and, you know, very curated, it's difficult to live in. And it's very intimidating to think about how you want to introduce your color and your personality in a space that's all white. It's even hard to live in that. So we were at one point going with whatever you want, whatever you like, we love. And then trying to find our moments, like maybe the powder room, let's be a little adventurous, you know, trying to like encourage them to like take baby steps. But now we kind of almost tell people when we're interviewing new clients, this is the work we love to do. And it's bold and it's vibrant and it has color. And it's because that's the right color for you and your story. And if that resonates with you, we're the firm for you. But if you want us to do what you saw, that we might not be the firm for you. It's no shade. There is probably a firm for you, but we are not the firm for you because we want to use color. We want to use textures. We want to use fabrics. And I think by shifting that language, there's a difference in what you'll see in our portfolio over the past few years of what we've output. It's why people go, I love how you use color. It's because I actually demanded that the clients, you know, respect that that's a part of what we want to bring to the story. And, you know, that's been our evolution.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because we're one in the same in that way. I've had calls with prospective clients where they say they don't want any color. And I think, why did they even call us? Did they not see our portfolio? There's not a single project on there that's all white and black. Like, so I will say that, you know, one way to really help introduce color outside of, you know, the traditional paint and wherever else is introducing it in the textiles, but in a way that includes pattern. And I think that makes it a little more palatable for clients to take on color if they see it in a stripe or they see it in a polka dot or whatever it is, a buffalo check, that gets them a little bit more excited. And then when they see that like tiny bit of color they're introducing, then they open up their mind a little bit more. So I think that's one way that we've helped introduce color quite a bit. We do use a lot of white and black, definitely a lot of white. But I will say that for me to say green is a neutral, they don't even blink when I say it anymore. And it used to be the case where we're like, green, no. And now it's like, to me, green, blue, you know, like tan, those are all neutrals. Those are not, those are basically like black and white to me. So it's not like we're really introducing color in that way. So I think there is more an openness for it, but it's a matter of just continuing to push. And I think what's interesting, actually going back to talking about like the frosted tints and all of that, and you talking about outside of COVID, you know, is all those like earthy tones. And there's a whole lot of studies about why we gravitated towards organic modern movement after COVID and the need for touch and human interaction in nature. But now I'm hoping we don't overcorrect entirely and now become like all chrome and cool tones. However, I do think it's going to become a little bit more formal than it has been in the past 5 years. I do think we're going to get a little bit more structured. It's going to be a little bit less loose and open living and kind of all like greens and rattans and all the things. You'll still have that, but I think it's not going to be so over the top as it was right after our lockdown.
That idea of casual living. Yes, I totally agree. And we're seeing that in the sort of design trend world and forecast world, that Art Deco, traditional interiors, like that timeless aesthetic, which for 20-year-old, my daughter's 20, she's like, this looks amazing. I've never seen this before. I'm like, well, I have, you know? So like, I think it's interesting, and it will, you know, that's why we get up every day, because things do change and it changes our perspective. I can remember, I don't know, maybe 2020 before COVID, we were talking about arches. So in European shows, everything was arched. We were seeing this shape, you know, everywhere, and furniture and architecture. And, you know, I just walked down the street and like our local coffee shop is being framed in with arches all over the place. So it took 5 years. It's probably, you know, kind of mainstream. Maybe we're going to move to something else. But these indications and these signals, I think one of you said the word signals, they do help inform where things are going. And I think, you know, we speak this language every day and educating our clients that this is important to, you know, longevity of your project, but also looking fresh and new is, like, it's really critical. But I have to imagine that there's clients that are just like, hard no. Like, is there any color that has been like, nope, not doing it? I don't care how good you are, I'm not doing this color. Can you think of any?
Oh, yeah. But it's like they sort of have told us that up front, you know, it's like, and it's because of their own like personal detest of a color. It's not because of the way we're trying to use it. They've already come to us with like, I'm never going to use purple. Don't even show it to me. I actually had a client several years ago who said she hated purple so much, and we still tried to show her purple, and she just about lost it on us and was like, did you not listen to a word I said? I said I hated purple. And I was like, oh my God, okay. We were just trying to push a little. Calm down. It's fine. So you do get those emotional reactions from time to time.
I agree with Sarah. We, you know, as you grow, as you learn, you know, as a designer, you certainly decide where you want to pick your battles. And so what we have learned, I used to be that person who's like, challenge accepted. You hate purple. I'm going to show you a purple you love. No longer am I willing to fight that fight. So now what I do, like Sarah said, is, you know, in the onboarding and interviewing, when we are taking on a new project, I'm asking them for strong emotions, like visceral reactions. And even if you can't articulate it, I'm going to have a session with you and we're going to pull out colors. I'm going to say, put a pile over here that you hate and that you love. And anything else in the middle, I feel like that's my chance to sell you. If you don't have a strong emotional reaction to it, if I feel like it's the right one, I'm going to show it to you in context. Don't worry about it. But if it's like, I know that when I see that color red, it makes my blood boil, I am not here to try to like, oh, that's you and your therapist, not me. So I'm going to let you have that. And then I'm going to keep the loves. And I'm going to know that I have the margin to bring in anything that you didn't have a strong, like, can't touch emotion to, if it's the right color for the story we're trying to tell.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to lead into I have a little challenge. That's our next little segment here where, you know, what colors are tricky for you? For me, I live in a historic community. So, you know, there's great crown molding and beautiful trim. And so you can really get involved in color room to room. That's not a lot of open concepts here in my little town. So I think people embrace color. What is difficult for me is open concept living, bringing color into those spaces. So like if someone's like, I love red, I want it in my open concept living room.
Oh my God. Well,
how do you even do that?
That's a look.
Yeah, that's a look.
Could you guys think of like a tricky scenario and how you might overcome that with like a specific color? Like think of a tricky color and what are the moments just to show your design expertise. I want people to hear, you know, how much thinking we do when we're trying to solve these problems.
Well, just rest assured, we do a lot of thinking, like a lot. I can't think of a color family off the top of my head that is absolutely a challenge to sell when I show it in context. And again, if it's not on that no-go list. But what I will say is sort of a challenge is not necessarily rooms, because that, you know, sight lines, there's a way to do that. It's the actual dynamic of the people living in the space. So if husband has a color he loves, wife doesn't love it so much, then it's figuring out the hierarchy of that space, who you lean toward, how do you not offend one versus the other. I don't think it's an actual shade. I think it's really trying to overthink the role that color is going to play in the design and the story you're telling. And you want to do everything you can to not make someone feel like they are not a part of that story. So if she doesn't like that color and he really loves that color, is it the right one to put on the wall? Probably not. Is there a reference point, though, on a pillow or something else? Maybe. And then what's the color they both love where they both feel seen and heard in that space? I think that's the kind of the way that I would phrase it. Because I can't think of one like that shade of purple that I can't. I think if it's the right one and it works for the family or for the client, it's easy to sell.
Yeah, I have the most annoying answer to this in that, you know, when somebody asks you, like, what's your favorite color? I give such a designer answer and I say, I don't have one. And I truly don't. Like, I can find a case for just about any color in any aspect of life. And there's ones that I gravitate towards time and again, but I really don't have a favorite color. Where I do have a little bit of trickiness when it comes to design is what I call Crayola color. It's like those, like, very, like, primary, like the, you know, the Crayola green, Crayola orange, Crayola red, like that, those are hard for me to work in unless the entire space is going to embrace it. Like if you want just a touch of Crayola red, that is going to be hard for me. I will work really hard and I will find a way. I may not love it and I may not photograph it, but I could surely try. But where I have had success using those palettes is, like I said, when the entire space embraces it. It's in the tile, it's in the wallpaper, it's in the paint, it's in the every little accessory. It's an explosion of that true rich color than just trying to do like a tiny little bit of it.
Yeah, that's, again, fair, right? Like primary chromatic color, unless you have like a little frame for it to keep it in its... is difficult. So as I think these questions are going to come up more and more as our clients are getting excited about color, using color the right way will probably take designers back to like their roots in color theory, which is fun, right? That's what makes this exciting.
I will say I did just wrap a project and photographed it that it was unlike color-wise, unlike anything I've ever done. And it was all Crayola color. The entire thing was a jewel box, but it was all of it. And there was one point where we were designing the home and there's one hallway. And I said, it needs to be white. And the husband said to me, there's no way I'm doing a white hallway. No way. And now the hallway is a bright purple. And I was against it, but he pushed me and it actually looks fantastic in the showcase of all the colors coming together. It worked really, really well. So there's a time and a place for sure. Sometimes we need to be pushed as designers too.
Well, and we learn every day too. So like, I think that's fair. That's a good assessment. Well, you guys have given me so much of your valuable time. I really appreciate it. So one more section. This is going to be fun. It's a little rapid fire crystal ball section. Two questions. So each of you tell us one color you think will be everywhere next year. And number two, one color you don't expect to be popular, but maybe you're hoping makes a comeback. Okay. And I'm going to add one more. Three. And then one you want to actually see less of. So coming, what's going to be everywhere next year, one that you want to comeback shade, and then one you want to actually see less of. Whoever wants to start, go.
Oh, I think it'll be like, I don't know how to say it, but like a taupe, like a mauve-y taupe will be in a lot of places. It's sort of a clean way or an easy way of introducing quote unquote brown.
Neutrals or khaki, which is our color of the year, which we have not talked about yet, but that's where we're seeing it. We're seeing khaki coming.
That's right. That universal khaki is a good one.
Yep. Okay. Ariane.
I think in my region, which is on the tail end of any trend curve, the color that I can see us jumping to the most is any shades of green, especially those deep greens, rich tones. I see that in the southeastern region, absolutely having kind of a come up where some of the other areas of the country have already embraced it.
Okay. One color you expect to be less popular, but hopes make a comeback, like color you want to bring back.
I actually think that green is going to become less popular than it has been. I don't think people are going to stop using it. I think it's still going to be asked for, but there was a huge wave where it was like, hey, it doesn't have to be blue. It can also be green. And then it was all green, everything. So I do think there's going to be a little bit of a less of a demand for green.
But is there a color that you want to come back? Like you haven't seen it in a bit, but want back?
Oh, gosh. You know what? This is going entirely against everything I just said, but I love jewel tones. And the idea of bringing in like a really rich, saturated color is super exciting to me. Not the Crayola color, the super rich, like jewel, like that, like Marianne said earlier, like that, like royal feel, like that. There's a little more grittiness and depth to it in the whole home that we are just wrapping up. There's a bar off the kitchen and we did it in Bohemian Black, which is actually like a purple, but it's like you have to look closely to see the purple. And so I like that sort of, I like to push in that direction.
I love that too. Okay. Ariane, what do you think? What do you want to make a comeback? And then what do you want to see less of?
I feel like for me, it's difficult to kind of put myself in these boxes because one of the things I love how I design is I am in a market that I said is on the tail end of a trend curve. So what we're doing and seeing here is so different from what I get to see when I explore the world. So I understand there's part of the world that sees color this way, and where I live, we see color this way. So we still haven't even touched or embraced a lot of the beautiful tones and hues that others have already been done with. This has never been a moment in the South. It totally could be a moment. Any of these beautiful yellows, citrines, chartreuse, like that whole spread has never, it's an untapped market here. And I feel like it would be so fun to just dive in and bring that here. I would love to see that have another moment, specifically in the South. Maybe they should have a first time moment in the South.
It should. And then what do you want to see? What do you want to see? Just move along. Just go. Both of you. Sarah, you said you had a good answer.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a good answer. I'm just tired of gray. I'm just tired of gray. Like, I don't, like, it's so blah.
Here's what I would say, Sarah. We could do so much better. We could do so much better. It's not that it's bad. It's that we could do so much better. There's so much more that we could do. It feels like a cop-out.
It served its purpose when it was here. Yep. Yeah, right? Remember when it felt new and we were like, gray, it's this palate cleanser. And
oh, it's not white. It's so different.
Oh, yeah. Like that was, but that was a big arc. That was a decade of that gray and white situation. So it's, I agree. It's nice to see. However, but it's going to start to come back like a little bit of silver. Not like those mid-tone grays. It's going to be a little different.
I feel like that's kind of full circle moment for the frosted tints, maybe as an option to jump. But also, I think if you intentionally are bringing grays into new spaces, new homes, it feels non-committal. Like, it, you know, where before it was like, oh, that's the jump we're making. And we kind of...
That's so chic, right? Yeah.
Right? It was so chic.
Feels builder grade.
There you go. That's why I say we could do better, because it just feels like it's more about not offending than it is making taking a stand color-wise, right?
Agreed. Yes. Very, very well said by both of you guys. Well, this has been awesome. So just as we wrap up, how can people find you? Give me your socials or your website or whatever so people can look you up. Ariane, why don't you start?
Yes. You can find me. My website is arianebelazaire.com. I know it's a lot of letters, but if you just try to spell it phonetically, you'll get there. And my Instagram is arianebelazaireinteriors. So I'd love to see you, DM me with questions, but have a lot of fun over there.
You can find me everywhere at Join the Band. That's our social handle everywhere with an extra D on the end. But once you start typing it in, like Ariane said, like you'll get there. Join the Band. And same, we like to have a lot of fun. I like to share tips and tricks. And if you know me and if you follow me at all, you know that I love to share information both with designers and the general public. So if there's ever a question, I am an open book and happy to answer it.
Well, you guys have been awesome. Thank you so much for this conversation. Keep up the good work. Keep up the color fight. Go get it. Go get
Thank
it, everybody.
You. Thank you, Sue.
You know, until next time, hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
One last thing before we say goodbye. Congratulations to Michelle Mishi Fahmy, the Los Angeles-based interior designer behind House of Mishi. She was named one of Apartment Therapy's design changemakers and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Architectural Digest, and more. And she's currently our November Designer of the Month. We absolutely love her work and hope you'll join us in celebrating her at SW Design Pros on social media. As always, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and tell other design and color lovers about our show. See you next time on Color Mixology.